This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 6th at 10:30 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Mike DeWine will agree to debate Nan Whaley. Still unlikely. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd politicians, those Snollygosters, who duck debates or shame their opponents for not debating. I'm Mike Thompson. Steve Brown is off this week. We are now just short of 5 weeks until Election Day, just a week or so before Ohioans can start casting early ballots. It is safe to say we are in the home stretch of the campaign. The ads are all over TV. Our mailboxes are filling with direct mail. Our inboxes are getting swamped with fundraising emails. Some are pretty creative. More on that later in the podcast. To reset the big races and look at where Campaign 2022 stands, we'll tap into WOSU TV's weekly political roundtable show, Columbus on the Record, hosted by yours truly. This week, our panel was Jesse Balmert, a reporter from the USA Today Ohio Network, Andy Chow, a reporter from Ohio Public Radio, Republican strategist Bob Clegg, and Common Cause Ohio's Sam Gresham. We begin with the prospects of the two candidates for Senate squaring off. After weeks of indecision, political jockeying, and negotiations behind the scenes, Ohio's two candidates for U.S. Senate have agreed to debate twice in October. Republican J.D. Vance and Democrat Tim Ryan will debate in Cleveland and Youngstown. The Cleveland debate is set for Monday, October 10th at 7 p.m. Plans are for this debate to air on TV stations in Cleveland, Dayton, and Columbus. The Youngstown debate will happen a week later on Monday, October 17th, also in the evening. It is sponsored by WFMJ-TV, and as of right now, it appears it'll be aired locally. Jesse Balmert, both of these debates in Northeast Ohio, not in Central Ohio, not in Southwest Ohio. What does that say?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is really Tim Ryan's backyard almost and the district and area that he represents in Congress right now. So I'm a little surprised that they didn't agree to a debate in Southwest Ohio, you know, where J.D. Vance has been living recently. And so, but, you know, it's a going to be televised across the state so people can listen in regardless where they are living.
Youngstown, I predicted that one debate would be there because that does seem to be, Andy, ground zero in this campaign.
I think it absolutely is. And if you look at the candidates on the Republican side and the Democratic side, they both see that as an area that they need to win. The Mahoning Valley area, Mahoning County, Trumbull County, these are areas that the Democrats used to win historically but have since flipped for Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020, and the Republicans think that if they can win that area, that they can maybe take away the whole state. And so Republicans, Democrats, Tim Ryan, J.D. Vance, they're all going to be fighting for that Mahoning Valley area.
Yeah, the polls out this week, the latest poll is very similar to the polls we have seen the past few weeks. This one done by Spectrum News and by Siena College. It shows Tim Ryan with a 46-43% lead, certainly within that margin of error, still neck and neck. Sam Gresham, this is good news for Tim Ryan, but do you wish he was starting to pull away a little bit, or does he have any hopes of pulling away before Election Day?
No, I thought in the midterm, if he's close, he's in the race. I never thought there would be a double-digit spread, if anything. I have to say to you, I didn't have much confidence in Mr. Ryan's campaign initially because of the way it was structured, going after the right wing. I have to give him respect now because he is at least competitive. And I also think he's done something that the rest of the country is looking at. How does a Democrat run in a ruby red state? And he's given them a book on how you do that. Now, in the end, how successful he will be, I'm a little concerned about, but it's going to be close. My other concern, too, was I didn't see much black representation. And there were questions all across the state, and particularly in the Columbus community, where is he at on those issues? I've been assured by people up there that he's good and he's talkable.
All right. We'll get to that in a moment. I want to get to Bob, though. On the tightness of the race, yeah. If you look at the cutouts, the demos and the gender, Tim Ryan does much better among independents and much better among women. Mm-hmm. Is that concerning? for Republicans?
The women is typical. I mean, Republicans do well with men. Democrats do better with women. Independents, that is an issue. In a lot of the polling that's been done in other states and even here in Ohio, independents have been tending more Republican than Democrat, and a lot of that is because of what's going on in Washington. That's an issue. I found it interesting, though, that they're doing these debates in Northeast Ohio because it's almost like J.D. Vance is keeping Tim Ryan up away from the rest of the state because he isn't really that known outside of Northeast Ohio. J.D. is even less known. So for him to go into Cleveland and to go into Youngstown is actually very helpful for him. But I think it kind of hurts Tim Ryan to be stuck up there.
Yeah, Jesse, in that poll, Tim Ryan has basically a 20-point lead over J.D. Vance in Northeast Ohio, 57-35% or something like that. So, but still, that's Democratic-rich country traditionally.
Yeah, I mean, it's not reinventing the wheel to say that you need to win Cleveland if you're going to have a shot as a Democrat in the state of Ohio. So it's an area where they need to increase turnout, get their people to hit the polls. But, to Bob's point, you got to get the rest of the state as well.
I don't want to spend too much time looking at these numbers, but they do offer a little window into how the voters are thinking. And Sam, you talked about the African-American vote. If you go back and look at that poll, Tim Ryan wins the African-American, the black vote by, I think, 85%. But if they ask him, do you have a favorable opinion of Tim Ryan? The black voters said 35%, they didn't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. How do those two things square?
They square quite well because he's in the Northeast. And if you don't travel around the state or you're not involved with party politics, you wouldn't know who Tim Ryan is. But I think there's another thing. The way he cast his image, there was not enough African-American presence. Mm-hmm. And the issues that he was pushing for didn't resonate with African-American people. They do, but not specifically. So people, in conversations, and people have a tendency to want to call me and ask me my opinion. And I have some friends up there, and I talk to them, and they say, he's workable. We can work with him. He's going to need that vote because of the closeness. He needs a good black turnout. He really does.
So this came up. I followed Tim Ryan on the campaign trail one day, and he went to Toledo, Lima, and Dayton. And ending in Dayton, he had a town hall with black voters in the community. And that's something that he heard a lot about. They thought that he was running more towards the right and not talking to the issues that they wanted to hear him talk about. And there were some people there who didn't even know who he was, so they were still getting to learn who he was, thought he was somebody who represents a rural area instead of the Youngstown area. And there was also this sentiment conveyed among people who did know him that said, listen, you're running to the right, but that makes the liberal voters feel abandoned.
Well, when your latest TV spot talks about how you voted with Trump on these issues, I mean, my God, Sam, is he a Democrat or a Republican? I mean, if I'm watching TV, I'm thinking, yeah, that's the Republican.
But that game's working, man.
It's for now, working. Until no. It isn't. The problem with that game is politics is so polarized now that, trust me, he's not going to trick any Trump supporters to vote for.
Can I tell you, the Trump base is becoming shaky. And if people
tell Tim Ryan that, because that's all he seems to be focused on is the Trump base.
But he's doing what he needs to do to get, if he gets 10% of that, and God knows if he gets more than that, he'll run away with this race.
Yeah, but what's going to happen once he's elected? You guys are all going to think, oh, he'll go back and he'll vote all that liberal way. But be careful, because one thing about Tim Ryan, he wants to stay in office. Yeah. So if he sees a vote coming down the road that might hurt him with Ohio, whether it's liberal or not, he's not going to go.
Mathematical thing you need to remember is 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years is a long time.
It's a long time, and it's a long calendar. I'm not going to get nervous. All I want to do is cut a deal. I don't care who you are. And this is the slice I'm looking for.
Well, Tim Ryan will cut a deal with anybody, that's for sure. Jesse, he's proven that.
Jesse Balmer, I mean, he doesn't need to go for the diehard Trump supporters. He's not going to get the diehard Trump supporters. He's looking for the folks who voted for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012, who then voted for Trump in 2016 and 2020. That's who Tim Ryan's going for, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tim Ryan is going for whatever votes he can pick up here. And I mean, I'm sure J.D. Vance will come out and make it clear that he was the candidate endorsed by Donald Trump. And I imagine those who support Donald Trump will, you know, follow that accordingly.
Okay. Mike DeWine continues to ignore calls for him to debate Nahum Whaley in the race for governor. Here's a big reason why. That Siena College Spectrum News poll has the governor up by 23 points. DeWine leads Whaley 55% to 32%. Whaley continues to criticize DeWine for his strict opposition to abortion rights, his lack of action on gun control, the nuclear bailout, but it's really not having an impact on the polls. Andy Chow, Mike DeWine is not only ignoring calls to debate Nahum Whaley, he's ignoring Nahum Whaley, as is the Republican Party. They're really just not criticizing her. There's no attack ads out there that I've seen.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I think it's unfortunate for a public official not to engage in a debate. But yes, he is running sort of this front runner's race where if you're far enough ahead, seems like the best strategy you could do is just ignore everything altogether and not even seem like you're campaigning that much. And it seems like anything that he does at this point could only end up hurting him. Entering a debate might end up hurting him, might elevate the status of Nahum Whaley in the long run. So he's going with this strategy of sort of just ignoring everything altogether.
Bob Clegg, editorial boards, newspapers have been hammering Mike DeWine for not agreeing to debate. Does that matter? Will that change his mind?
No, it's insider stuff that the normal, typical voter doesn't even, you know, get into. I think the big number here is the fact that he's probably known by, 96-97% of the voters in Ohio. Nahum Whaley, much less well known. And you see it with the Senate debate. You have two guys that are basically unknown for large segments of the state. That's why they jump in these debates. They got to get more exposure. But Mike DeWine doesn't need any exposure. He's been on the statewide ballot how many times?
Jesse, you look at all the questions he would be asked at the debate. What about your stance on abortion? What about lack of action on gun control? Talk about your success with COVID, the first months of the COVID pandemic. He doesn't want to answer any of those questions, I'll bet.
Yeah, I mean, Mike DeWine hasn't talked very much about abortion since Roe v. Wade was overturned with the Dobbs decision earlier this summer. He had a speech that came out and said we should all be calm and civil about this, but really hasn't been answering many questions about it, even less than other statewide elected officials. You know, to your point, Nahum Whaley was there for the Dayton mass shooting, and that's certainly something she would bring up at a debate. And a lot of the gun reform has just stalled in the GOP-controlled legislature. So, yeah, are these topics that he would like to talk about? No, I think he'd rather focus on Intel, focus on some of, you know, the job creation efforts. And that's what you're seeing in his ads, and that's what he's presenting to voters.
And if he brings up COVID, Sam, he angers Republicans who didn't like his shutdown.
That's true, and I thought that was amazing. They wanted to cut his throat on him trying to do something about COVID. I want to go back to Nan, though. Nan had a good opportunity if she had wrapped herself in the right issues. I also think it's an illustration of the people you put around you and how they think. I think our young senator candidate was willing to take a risk. Nan was so conservative about the issues, she didn't want to appear to take a risk. I mean, with the whole Dobbs issue, she should have pounded that 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, but she didn't. She talked about her family. She talked about having somebody in the governor's seat like her. I think there were more issues that she could have used that could have helped her in a campaign.
Now, the question often comes up is the economy is the most important issue to voters this cycle, and it is. But I went back and looked at the polls in 2018 and 2022. Same cycle, a midterm election. The economy was number one in both elections, a little bit more important this time around. But abortion, if you look at that, in 2018, abortion was listed as the most important issue by 4% of the respondents. Now it's 13%, still not the most important issue. But that's a huge jump, Bob. Is that concerning for Republicans?
No, because there's also people that are pro-life that fall into that percentage. I found it interesting that Tim Ryan doesn't want to talk about abortion. Nothing in his, it's so weird to watch a Nahum Whaley ad lately because she has jumped in on that. She has a person who had an abortion and explained why. I mean, she's trying to use it. Tim Ryan seems to be running away from it. And he did flip on the issue. He used to be pro-life. Now he's pro-choice up to birth. And maybe that's why he doesn't want to use it. But, I mean, if you think it's a good strategy, you should let him know, because he doesn't want to talk about it.
Andy, another issue that was in the two polls that could go both ways, both on the right and the left, but in 2018, threats to democracy was not even listed.
That's right.
This year, it's 20% the most important issue, right, just behind the economy.
Wonder how it got that way.
It's the same thing like what Bob just said. It depends on who you ask and what their definition is. So my colleague Joe Ingles with the State House News Bureau asked the Ohio Democratic Party Chair Liz Walters about this and said, listen, if people are saying they're worried about the threat to democracy, yes, you're thinking about those who are worried about the insurrection storming the Capitol. But people, it could go back to people who believe in the big lie and believing that maybe the elections are rigged, which it's not. But it could, people could be answering that way, too.
You know, it's been a perennial thing. It's always been the economy, stupid. I forgot who coined that.
James Cargill.
But it's not. It's about who you feel comfortable with moving forward in this country. That's what it's all about. They always talk about those economic issues. I mean, Barack Obama was on the edge of oblivion in his first campaign because the economy was dead. It wasn't, therefore, it became an issue. But it's not. It's about who do I feel comfortable with moving forward?
Or who do you blame if things are going poorly?
That's to a degree, not totally. Yeah, they didn't blame the Republicans that much in Barack's first term because Bush was there. And they kind of glossed over that it was a Republican problem. It was a problem of the economy. Yeah. That's what they said.
All right. As we know, Ohio's unconstitutional congressional map gives Republicans an advantage in most districts and Democrats an advantage in a couple districts. The congressional races here in central Ohio appear uncompetitive, with Steve Stivers, Mike Carey, and Joyce Beatty, and Jim Jordan rated as likely to win. But in Toledo and Cincinnati, the races are closer. In Cincinnati, incumbent Steve Chabot faces a tough challenge from Democrat Greg Landsman. That district has become less safe for Republicans. In Toledo, in northwest Ohio, the so-called snake by the lake district is gone, as is Democrat Marcy Kaptur's built-in advantage. She faces Republican J.R. Majewski. Majewski is a far-right candidate. He was among the protesters on January 6th, and it has come out in recent weeks, thanks to AP reporting, that he has embellished his military record. Bob Clegg, let's go to the district in Cincinnati, District 1. How concerned are Republicans there? After all these map making, the Republicans could actually lose a seat this
time. Yeah, I mean, it's a really close district, party-wise. I think it's maybe slightly Democrat. Steve Chabot, though, has been there for a long time. And it includes, I think, all of Warren County, if I'm not mistaken. And that's going to be a good base for him to run from. It's going to be a matter of turnout. And I see at this point where the turnout down there is probably going to help Steve Chabot survive that race.
Steve, I'm not sure on this structure and its overall effect, but I want you to remember it's only good for 1 year now. So this next map that we're coming up with is going to be different. Also,
is it? Maybe.
We're going to have a different Supreme Court.
I think it'll be more Republican, but that's just me.
But that's just you. I think the Supreme Court turnout in the vote who gets elected is going to be a very important thing. I hope they find some way to slap Republicans on their hands this time for not giving us a new map. How about $5,000 a week until you get that map right? I think we need to do something like that.
Cincinnati, you work for Cincinnati Inquirer. What are the folks down there thinking about a city council member unseating a congressperson?
Yeah, so the first district is actually a great example of how redistricting went. Because of the rules, the city of Cincinnati had to be completely included in this district. Previously, it had been split up in between Chabot and Brad Winstrup's district. So keeping the city together helps Democrats. But there are a lot of different ways that you could have drawn that district so that Cincinnati was completely enclosed in Hamilton County, but that was not something Republicans were excited about. They wanted to keep Warren County with it to offset some of the Democratic votes in Cincinnati. And so what you have right now is a very competitive district, probably the most competitive one in the state, and it is leaning a little bit to the Democratic side. But Steve Chabot, very well known, has been representing that area for a very long time. I think Greg Landsman is running a decent race down there, but it's hard to beat someone with that much name recognition.
Yeah, the Republicans have been leaning on the fact that he's an incumbent and that they think that this could be a red wave where if you're in a midterms when a Democratic candidate wins the presidency, they think that that could be their momentum they need.
Republicans had some hopes of defeating Marcy Kaptur up in Toledo when they redrew the districts and made it more competitive. J.R. Majewski wins the primary after painting Donald Trump on his front lawn. Republicans immediately were worried, and now those fears are really kind of coming true.
Yeah, I was never a big believer in that race. I'm from Toledo. In fact, I moved out of Toledo to come down here when Marcy Kaptur first started in the House of Representatives, so that's a long time ago. She's really popular up there. I didn't think they had much of a shot to begin with. I think the candidate obviously was problematic. But it was weird how that happened because you had two mainstream candidates in the primary running who pretty much attacked each other, a state senator, state rep, and that allowed him, this J.R. Majewski, to run up the middle and get the nomination.
J.R. Majewski, certainly an interesting candidate to watch, but Marcy Kaptur and Democrats are taking nothing for granted in Northwest Ohio. All right, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, where we honor the shrewdest politician of the past 7 days. Call me a glutton for punishment, but I give my email address to pretty much every candidate running for office in every election. Candidates from both parties. Many journalists do. We try to keep tabs on what the candidates are saying. Let's just say Donald Trump says a lot. I get 6 to 10 emails from him, his children, his wife, or his supporters every day. 6 to 10 emails from Donald Trump every day. He's ubiquitous in my email box. Tim Ryan, the Democrat seeking the U.S. Senate seat, sent out a unique fundraising email this week. It has pictures of him wiping his brow, standing in a doorway looking forlorn. Another one where he's looking at a computer, making a phone call. He looks tired in all of them. And the fundraising message reads, quote, "Can I let you in on a secret? I'm getting damn tired of emailing you asking for money." But in parentheses, "But don't tell my digital fundraising director, Emily, that I said that." Then he goes on to say, "It's late, he needs money, blah, blah, blah." That's a new one for us, complaining to a possible supporter that they have not given you money yet. I thought we in public media were the only ones who could do that. So, for bluntly trying to shame supporters to relieve him of his burden of raising money, Tim Ryan is our Snollygoster of the Week. That is it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. Steve Brown returns next week as we get even closer to Election Day, as we do. And if you like what you hear on Snollygoster, please tell your friends to look for us wherever they get their podcasts. For web producer Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster.